This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
When you want to grow your business, use Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Seamlessly collaborate with your team using a suite of built-in tools and features to make your workday easier, like huddles to schedule impromptu meetings and avoid another calendar invite, or Workflow Builder, which lets you automate routine tasks so you can spend more time on the work that matters most. Slack. Grow your business here. Learn more at slack.com.
I'm Jared Waitley. Here's a snapshot of Monday, April 15. MRO Michael Christian explains the Matt Crouch and Zach Butters rulings from the weekend.
The key point is about whether he has contested the ball or whether he has elected to bump. And in this particular case, I feel that Matt Crouch elected to bump and therefore the action was deemed careless. If players are going to arrive simultaneously at the ball from opposite directions, they need to have their hands down and contesting the ball in a genuine manner, and didn't feel like Matt Crouch did that. He elected to bump, didn't get his hands down to contest the ball. Zach Butters came in to contest the ball. He had both hands down, he had his eyes on the ball, and in fact touched the ball with his left hand, and in our judgment, believe that he was contesting the ball in a genuine manner.
In your snap judgments, Jack from Churnside Park had the Bulldogs on his mind.
So I know you were there on Friday night calling the Dogs-Bombers game. And look, I went to the game with a couple of mates and, you know, expecting a response from Essendon after their horror week and thought that I thought we played really good footy against the Cats the week prior. And I thought if we can bring that again, we should take care of Essendon. And I was completely left perplexed after the game. I can't remember seeing even our superstars' body language so negative, and it just makes me wonder whether we are playing for the coach or whether there's mixed messaging from the coach's box, the board. I just feel really confused as a supporter, and I know I speak on behalf of a lot of them because I've been looking for answers all weekend on nearly every platform known to mankind, and there's a really dull and unanimous feeling that among fans that it's probably time to think about life after beverage, and I seem to agree with that, because even the press conference, I was left completely clueless as to what he was even talking about. We are playing with careers as well. I'm really worried that we might lose some real talent, which Caleb Daniel, Bailey Dale, and Jack McRae, and even Rory Lobb will leave, and that we lose depth there. And then just game day stuff. So forwards jumping on top of each other. Waitman's trying to win a car every time it goes inside 50. He should be at the ground trying to crumb the ball. Riley West's been sensational, but I just don't know what we're doing with Norton either. I feel like we need a bit of protection down back, and he was drafted pick 9 as a defender, so I don't know why we're so stubborn in the fact that we've got to keep him forward. But I think if we push him back, we allow Sam Darcy and Jamara to flourish even more. So I'm really disappointed, and I'm really lost, to be honest, Jared.
And David King took the Bulldogs as his King's Gambit on the means test.
How do you tell your football club they're ugly?
Oh, right.
Well, that's what we're talking about, isn't it? And you don't know till you know. So you can argue when they knew. You can argue whether Beveridge knew it prior to draft trade period last year, or did he know it? Did he know round three? Did he know pre-season? Did he know when they'd come back that some had dropped off, didn't quite have the same fire as season's gone? Oh, there are two ways to see it without saying it. One's at selection, so you can go past players quickly. So you leave players out, which he's made conscious decisions to do regarding McRae and Daniels and these guys. And you can go young, you can play guys that everyone says, really, is he absolutely ready? And it, on the surface, it looks weird. Some of the selections, you start questioning, are they really going to play this guy for 20 weeks when they're a potential top four team? They know, but we don't. We haven't seen it yet. And then the roles, you can play players in roles that you go, well, why wouldn't they look at Norton at centre-half back just for 2 or 3 weeks? have a look. They've got enough tools up for because they know. They just know that they've got to get other players to stand up in other areas. So selection's one way of saying, hey, we're ugly, but we're not telling anyone we're ugly. And there's the silence. There's just the silence. I haven't heard Luke Beveridge at all this year nominate or offer his thoughts on what this season could become. I haven't heard him say, hey, I think we're right there. I think we've got to find one or two players, or we're working on this method, or we're working on that. I haven't heard Amit Bain say too much either after last year saying they were a top four list. So are they still there? Has he said to us, no, they're no longer a top four list, and why? Why is that the case? Why has it happened so quick? And if you're not a top four list, what are you wasting this year for?
Kingy assessed Hawthorn as the big issue out of round five.
I haven't bought in like others to this Hawthorn rebuild. It's a full bottom-out job. And you have to make every post a winner. And every decision you make, you have to nail. I don't know if they've yet got their torchbearer. Who's the guy at the front? Who is it? I thought it was James Sicily. I saw James Sicily on the weekend. I'd seen him a couple of weeks in a row now. Not be as convincing in marking contests as he has always been. With double-fisted spoils with half a turtleneck. That's not him. He's normally big at the footy, up high, one clunk, intercept mark, let's go. Let's play. And he's as good a ball user as you'll see out of the back half. Mitchell threw him forward. And I'm thinking, is he throwing him forward because he needs a score? Or is he throwing him forward because he doesn't want him doing that down back? And that's harsh on James because he's a top liner. We love the way he plays. They've lost their edge in the middle. They'd be lost in the midfield without Warple. And he's a bit of the lost dog, Warple, a little bit. They've treated him pretty severely over the last couple of years to get him back into form. And he's back. He's playing some pretty good footy. But where are the rest? What's happened to John Newcombe? Like, where's that breakaway tackle breaking, step out of stoppage? Hey, draw two or three to defend him, get the hands out and go. They've lost that, and it can't just be Will Day and Jath. It just can't be. And don't tell me about Luke Bruce because Luke Bruce has not got 100 games left in him. I don't know what he's got. I'm not going to put a number on it, but he hasn't got 100 left in him. So where is it? And until they find their torchbearer, I think they'll meander.
Robert Craddock after the Masters victory of Scott Scheffler.
It was brilliant, wasn't it? Just on the show last week, we quoted it. Tweet from the analyst Brandel Chambly, and he just said coldly as this, he said, if Scheffler plays well, he wins by 10. If he plays average, he wins by 4. If his putter deserts him, he wins by 1. And I reckon by his standards, he played about average. He wasn't flawless. It was brilliant by anyone else's standards, but his form line going into it was win, win, second. This is an extraordinary surge for a golfer where it's just so hard to win.
And Gareth Hall on Pride of Jenny's spectacular victory in the Queen Elizabeth Stakes.
She's transcending the sport. There's no doubt about that because how exciting she is. Win, lose or draw, she loses or wins her way. I think when you look back and James McDonald said it was embarrassing, I think she embarrassed everyone behind her, Pride of Jenny, just the way that she goes about it. But whenever you see an athlete do what she's doing at the moment in any chosen sport, when they ask new questions and she's asked new questions to her rivals that they've never seen before, they don't know how to answer them at the moment. She was truly remarkable there on Saturday. And when I think about it now and after analysing it on Giddy Up this morning with the team, I think she might have won the Queen Elizabeth by doing what she did in the Australian Cup. Because Craig Williams was chasing her in the Australian Cup and realised he couldn't win doing that. So he jumps and then goes slower and doesn't bring the field up to her like he did in the Australian Cup. And that's the result that you get.
And that's just a snapshot. The full program and all interviews are available through the Waitley podcast. Subscribe at sen.com.au.